how can your child participating in something they want to do be taking away from your parenting time? It's your child is with you and they have things they want to do. That's your parenting. You need to be parenting during this time. It's not your parenting time.
Right. It bothers me when a parent talks about how inconvenient parenting is.
Oh, yes. I expected it to be convenient when I had children.
Well, it's one of these cases, and this is a dad, and I don't want to rail on dads because this could be mom, but I've heard this more from dads than I have from moms. But it's kind of like, well, when they were married, apparently mom did all the hard work. And now that dad has to do some of the hard work, it's as if he's like, well, I'm not doing that, you know?
Yes, yes.
Or why should I do that?
Hey, this is Diane Dirks.
And I'm Rick Voiles.
We've been working with co-parents in conflict for more than two decades. We've taught classes, written books, counseled parents, empathized, and agonized a few times to help people make sense of their complicated families.
We were talking one day, and it occurred to us that helping the most difficult cases comes down to one simple concept. Is one parent willing to let go of the tug-of-war rope, or is it worth it to hold on and fight?
So we invite you to take this journey with us each episode as we tackle the questions, should you hold on or let it go? Hey, listeners, you've probably heard us talking about our new Hump Day Help support group that meets every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time. It's been amazing to hear listener stories and offer support and advice around topics such as parental alienation, narcissistic abuse, false allegations, and all those topics that high conflict co-parenting seems to include. So join us every Wednesday via Zoom or whenever you can make it. The only requirement is that you become a Patreon non-impossible VIP. Just go to patreon.com/cpdilemmas to learn how. It's only $10 a month and a great way to be with others who just need to hear that, like you, they're not crazy. Sign up today. Details are also in the show notes.
Welcome to Co-Parent Dilemmas, where we give you practical solutions to those impossible co-parents. Hello, Diane. It's good afternoon, actually, this time.
It is. And it's a hot one here on the island. Is it hot there in Atlanta?
It's not hot. It's comfortable.
Oh,
good, comfortable, short sleeve shirts.
Good.
Yep.
I just got back from Ohio and it was very nice up there because they're having cool, dry, you know, springtime weather. But it's turning quickly into summer down here.
Yes.
So, Rick, today we're going to talk about something that actually just gets under my skin.
Oh, boy.
It bothers me when a parent talks about how inconvenient parenting is.
Oh, yes. I expected it to be convenient when I had children.
Well, it's one of these cases, and this is a dad, and I don't want to rail on dads because this could be mom, but I've heard this more from dads than I have from moms. But it's kind of like, well, when they were married, apparently mom did all the hard work. And now that dad has to do some of the hard work, it's as if he's like, well, I'm not doing that, you know?
Yes, yes.
Or why should I do that? Or you're interfering now with my freedoms by asking me to do these inconvenient things for my child.
I've got to learn how to be a parent now that we're divorced and they just don't want to do it. Yep.
So let me read this email from Amanda. And she says, good afternoon. I've been listening to your show for quite some time and I need help interpreting this language in my parenting plan. My daughter's father and I live about 30 minutes away from each other, and he makes his stay-at-home wife do all the transportation for our daughter during his parenting time. He has most recently expressed to me that it is incredibly inconvenient for his wife and two-year-old son to wait for our daughter to go to dance class. I have offered suggestions to accommodate their inconvenience, but he refuses all of my suggestions. He states that taking her to dance is taking away from his parenting time and now has taken an interest in enrolling our daughter into soccer, same as her little brother, so it is more convenient for his family. Are you sensing a sarcastic tone in my voice? I'm sorry, Amanda. I'm adding tone.
There you go.
I'm getting increasingly upset as I'm reading this. She says, our daughter has been in dance since August, and all absences from dance have been during his parenting time. He also chose the summer week of her dance recital, and I'm afraid he won't take her. My question is, do I have final decision-making and extracurricular activities according to the below paragraph from my parenting plan? We will read that later. I want to deal with some of this other stuff first. Is that okay with you, Rick?
Yes.
If I don't, I'm just going to stay angry.
Yes. No, let's divide it up. Divide and conquer. So,
and she later sent us an email to tell us that her daughter was 4. Which matters because if her daughter was, and she's only been in dance since August, so it's been less than a year. Mm-hmm. If she were 12 or 14 and she's been in dance for 10 years, that changes things a little.
It would.
But so she's 4 and she's just started into this dance activity. But you know what my beef is, right?
Uh-huh.
This is inconvenient for dad to wait. I mean, I don't know. Think back, Rick. I don't know what activities your girls were involved in, but my kids were in activities that I spent an enormous amount of time waiting. My daughter was the cheerleader. My son was in the band and he played basketball and he played hockey for a time. And, you know, it was always something. I think of parents who have kids on a swim team where they swim in a, you know, meet for 30 seconds and then they spend 6 hours in the chlorine drenched air of an indoor swim thing waiting for the next 30 seconds.
Yes. Right? Yes, exactly. Yep.
And that's just, and they hate it. They don't like it. It's boring, but you do it because that's the price of giving your child the experience of an activity or an event where they might learn something.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it struck me, as I was saying earlier, that this is probably the kind of dad who didn't do much in the marriage around the parenting, and now he's wondering why he has to do it. But he's remarried.
Well, that's maybe why he got remarried. I need a wife. I don't want to do these things.
And Amanda said the new wife is carting the 4-year-old all around to her activities. Yes. I'm not clear on what this dad is actually doing.
I'm delegating, it sounds like.
So first of all, Amanda, I want to say I would not try to spend a lot of mental time and energy worrying about how to accommodate his inconvenience.
No.
I wouldn't even respond to that. Mm-mm. You know? Just say it. Well, our daughter seems to be doing well at dance. She's 4. There are going to be many things she'll try. She may try piano lessons. She may try swim. She may try, you know, tennis, any number of things. She may want to be on a basketball team, a softball team. You just trial and error for a very long time, for a number of years, until your child lands on the niche or the thing that he or she kind of says, yeah, this is where my talent is. I like this. I want to stick with this. So he's got a long time of, you know, waiting for that moment. It might not be till she's 12. And then he wants to sign her up for soccer so he can get a twofer.
Yeah, right. You are going to like soccer because your brother likes soccer. Oh my gosh.
But he's 2.
I know. How
I didn't even know they had
play? No, exactly. My gosh, I thought the youngest was 4.
Did they have soccer for 2-year-olds? I guess they would have some version of just kicking a ball around, maybe like a balloon.
I don't know. Yeah,
a soccer ball would bowl over a 2-year-old. I would think
it could. Yes. Yeah.
So I know we're laughing at this, and I don't mean to laugh at your question, Amanda. It's just that it's so ridiculous that this is this major inconvenience. I do understand your concern about the summer week.
Yeah.
However, if this is her first year and she's four and she misses a recital, I doubt it's going to be that big of a deal. So I wouldn't lose too much sleep over her missing a recital.
Not at this age, no.
He may not take her, and he doesn't have to take her. You know, so there's that. So my answer to that is don't lose sleep over that. Do you have any other thoughts, Rick, about this dad?
I've got one. He says here, it's taking away from my parenting time. How can your child participating in something they want to do be taking away from your parenting time? It sounds more like, no, you decided something and it's interfering what I want to do. It's your child is with you and they have things they want to do. That's your parenting. You need to be parenting during this time. It's not your parenting time.
Right. And it's the old adage that we come back to. It's not your time. It's your turn.
Yes, that's it.
So this is not your time to possess with your child. It's your turn to be a parent. And part of being a parent is carting your kids around to ridiculous activities that you have no interest in and getting bored as you wait for them to do whatever they have to do these activities. It's just the way it is.
Yep.
So if there are any moms or dads out there listening who are thinking like this dad, well, that's not fair. Now, we hear this quite a bit. Well, he or she is signing our kid up for all these things that happen on my time. And I do know there can be abuses of that.
Mm-hmm.
But especially if it's a team sport and your child enjoys it, and they're on a soccer team, a baseball, softball, basketball, I don't know, anything, even tennis, you know, it's an individual sport per se, but you're usually part of a team, that it's hard on the child's self-esteem when they get looked down upon or ridiculed for not participating as a team member, because you're privileged. You only have to come, you only have to come to practices every other week.
Yeah.
And why do we have to go to practices all the time? How is that you get a pass? That's never good for your child.
No.
And, you know, and if your child is protesting, I hate that sport, I don't want to do anymore, that's another thing and something that you and the other co-parent need to discuss. But there's also that piece of, do you really want to teach your child that when they commit to something, it's okay to willy-nilly it?
Mm-mm.
Not really be dedicated and not really do your best and just not show up and let people down. I mean, think of the value that you're teaching your child around that. That's part of them being in an activity, is the consistency and showing that you can be dependable and showing that you're willing to give your best for the team. I mean, why else do you want your child to play soccer? Because chances are they're not going to get a college scholarship. They're just going to be what is the purpose?
Right.
There's a social purpose. There's an athletic purpose. Helps your kids remain active so they don't get high cholesterol, I guess. But there's also the purpose of teaching them what it is like to be part of a group.
Mm-hmm.
How to be a active, participating, contributing group member. You teach that at home, I hope, if you have, you know, more than one person in your family, and you teach it outside the home in things like activities. So I encourage all parents, even if the other parent seems to want your kid to be in five different things, be involved.
Yeah.
If you fight it, your child will almost absolutely end up stuck in the middle of that conflict.
Definitely.
Right. And I think we talked about that before in one of our other episodes recently. You put the child in the middle when you start saying, well, do you want to do this?
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't you rather stay home and watch TV and do nothing? Of course, the child's going to say, yes, I would.
Uh-huh.
Well, what is that teaching them? And how is that helpful? So, but then you may have a kid who really wants to go. They love their team. They want to be part of it. They don't want to be ridiculed for seeming to have some sort of privilege that they don't have to participate at the same level. Most kids don't like that.
Nope.
You know. So that's all we got to say about that, I guess.
Don't worry about him being inconvenient. Yeah. He's only inconvenient because he feels inconvenienced. He could change that.
Yeah. Well, it's about accepting what real parenting is all about.
Yes.
So let's part two of this. Let's go to this paragraph. Rick, do you want to read her decision-making authority paragraph? Hey, listeners, you've heard the saying, April showers bring May flowers. And the same can be said about co-parenting. If navigating the beginning of the year has been difficult due to a co-parent's alcohol abuse, I have the perfect solution. It's called SoberLink. SoberLink is more than a portable alcohol monitoring tool. It's a pathway to new beginnings and stronger, healthier family dynamics. How it works is simple. Your co-parent will test at scheduled times. Built-in facial recognition confirms their identity. Tamper sensors flag any attempts to cheat, and results get sent instantly to your phone, giving you peace of mind that your kids are with a sober parent. So lay the groundwork for brighter days ahead. Visit www.soberlink.com/dilemmas to learn more and get $50 off of your device.
Yes, and this is the way the parenting plan is written. It's right out of it. The parties shall consult with one another in good faith regarding all major issues concerning the health, education, and welfare of their child. In the event the parties are unable to come to an agreement as to the major decisions regarding the minor child, mother shall have the final decision-making authority. However, the parties shall each have the right to make day-to-day decisions regarding their child without consultation and approval by the other parent when the child is within the direct custody and control of such parent. Such day-to-day decisions are distinct from major decisions pertaining to the child's health, education, and welfare. The parties acknowledge that prompt notification shall be provided to the other party via text of any doctor's visits. That's it.
Okay. Another parenting plan fail.
Yes.
There are several things in this paragraph that are bothersome. Number one, it does not mention that extracurricular activities are part of this.
Now,
typically, at least I know in Georgia, most parenting plans pull some wording right out of the statute of the state, right?
Right.
Because there is a statute here. I can't remember the state she said she was in, but she didn't have access to it, or she didn't send it to me. But whatever your state statute says about major decisions in divorce, that's a starting point.
Yeah.
Something tells me in their state, it doesn't mention extracurricular activities as a point of major decision making.
Yeah.
It says welfare. So, Rick, I went out and I looked up in the dictionary. What is the definition of welfare? Do you want to know what it says?
I do.
Okay. The Oxford Dictionary says that welfare is a noun, and it means the health, happiness, and fortunes of a person or group. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary says the meaning of welfare is the state of doing well, especially in respect to good fortune, happiness, well-being, or prosperity. It's interesting that both of these definitions mention some form of happiness.
Happiness, yes.
Can you imagine if parents had to agree on making their kids happy?
Right. Or it became illegal to make them unhappy. Yeah.
So I have a problem with the word welfare. Most courts interpret language or interpret actions or words or anything with a reasonable and prudent person standard.
True.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The judge is going to say, okay, the reasonable and prudent person would interpret this way.
Yep.
So health typically encompasses for a reasonable and prudent person anything to do with mental and physical well-being, right? Extracurricular activities, the reasonable person thinks that means anything you're doing outside of your daily school hours. But you and I have talked in the past about how some people like to press that definition out into lots of other things that the reasonable and prudent person may not feel as part of an extracurricular activity.
Right.
This word welfare is really a bothersome word because I don't know how you come to the decision of how a reasonable and prudent person would interpret the welfare of the child, unless you're talking about it from a agency standpoint. In other words, what the authorities would consider welfare, which would be food, clothing, and shelter.
Yeah, I can't
imagine.
But
the definition of welfare is about prosperity and happiness and feelings of well-being and all that. I mean, it's very, very broad.
Yes.
So I can't fault Amanda's attorney. If that's how the statute reads, they may be required to state it that
Say
way
that.
In
yep.
the parenting plan.
But they could also add some kind of parameters of what we're thinking or want you to think when we use the word welfare.
Right. And the word education.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, again, did they say, they're saying regarding all major issues concerning health, education, and welfare. So there we have to sort of interpret what is major.
Yes.
Mean.
Well, not day to day is what it implies here. Yep.
Major issue is surgery. Anything having to do with a hospital or an emergency room would be a major health issue, right? A major education issue is not homework times. It's changing schools or employing a tutor or something like that would be major issues. Don't know what they mean by major welfare issues. So it's problematic. We can just agree on that, right?
Yep.
Mother has final decision-making authority. So that's pretty clear, meaning they should discuss things, but if they can't agree, mom has major decision-making. So you could argue, and this is a question, Amanda, for you and your attorney to answer. You could argue that a child's extracurricular activities is part of his or her overall welfare.
I could. The way this is written, that's what I would have to do. Yep.
Secondary to primary needs like food, clothing, and shelter, which is what my mind goes to when I hear the word welfare. But it could be a secondary welfare need.
Well, social development, you were saying earlier, all the benefits of team sports and responsibility and accountability.
Well,
that's
and keeping
welfare.
Them out of trouble.
I mean,
you know, when kids don't have enough to do, they get in trouble. So another good reason to have your kids in activities, it gives them a focus outside of boredom.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're bored, they either isolate themselves in their room and play video games or they go out with their friends and do something they ought not do. So, you know, we could look at it that way as well. What bothered me the most, though, is how they ended this whole thing. The parties acknowledge that prompt notification shall be provided of the other party via text message of any doctor's visit. Where did that come from? That was out of the blue.
Talk about a non sequitur. It's like, what? Yes.
I suspect this was a problem in the past, and this paragraph was boilerplate, and they just threw that sentence on the end.
Uh-huh.
Because somebody complained about the other one not letting them know promptly enough that there was a doctor's visit, but this is a very poorly written sentence.
Yes.
Clarify anything.
What does promptly mean? Yes.
Prompt notification via text of any doctor's visit. Is that before the doctor's visit? Is it after the doctor's visit? Is it during the doctor's visit?
Uh-huh. So in 1992, we had a doctor's visit.
Yeah. Well, that's not reasonable, Rick.
I guess not the prompt either.
No, right. So this is some of the same stuff we've been talking about. Is it's great to have detail and the right kind of detail, but you know, they could have just wrapped it up at the end, but then when they threw that extra sentence, it just opened up more questions again. Instead of it closing any gaps, it created more gaps. So first of all, when it comes to decision-making authority, I think the paragraph really needs to be different than this. And I'm going to put in our show notes, and by the way, we have a new resources page that I've created for this kind of thing so that all you have to do is go to the resources page for anything that we mention like this. I'll also put the link to that in the show notes, but I'm going to put in the resources page a paragraph that I like to use about major decision-making because when you just say mom has final decision making, it makes it sound as if she doesn't have to consult dad.
Right.
She doesn't have to give him the opportunity to provide an opinion, which usually goes against the parameters of joint legal custody.
Correct.
Joint legal custody, typically by virtue of its meaning, is both parents have the opportunity to provide their input about these major decisions and at least have some sort of interaction around it. And then if they can't agree, then the person appointed as the final decision maker then is able to make the final decision. So I'm a fan of there being more detail around that.
Yes.
You know, mom will give dad a 2-week notice of when she's going to register the child for dance. And then dad has that 2 weeks to give his feedback. And at the end of 2 weeks, if he doesn't, she goes ahead and does what she's going to do. Even if he does give his feedback, she would do well to take it into consideration of her decision, obviously, but she may decide I'm doing it anyway. And then you move on from there. So there needs to be more than just you get final decision.
Yes.
Because that leaves you with a lot of power without even informing the other parent. So I'm going to throw that out there and point you to our language around that. So the only real problem, Amanda, with this paragraph is it does not specifically mention extracurricular. So I don't know for sure if you have final say. The first place to go would be look up your statute around that, see if there's any detail in the law. And if you don't know how to do that or it's still not clear, then you need to consult an attorney in your state who can help you understand what power you do have. And then I would kind of maybe, I don't know, your attorney may tell you, just do it and tell him you have the power to do it and see if he fights you on it.
Yeah, but practically speaking, I agree with all of that. But then the relating the two issues, extracurricular and the dance and the soccer, I'm not sure. So she has final decision making. So she can say yes to dance, but that doesn't mean dad has to take her during his parenting time. So he's still free to not take her. So she could have the authority, but does it mean that having final authority means that she can stop dad from signing him up,
signing her up for soccer? On whether or not they have the other standard paragraph in their parenting plan that we often see in Georgia, that it's not a very well written paragraph, but attorneys throw it in anyway, that says parties recognize that as the children get older, they will be interested in activities and both parties agree to make every reasonable attempt to ensure
right.
that the child
yes.
is involved in the activities they are registered for while in each parent's home.
Yep.
And the purpose of that was because of exactly what you said. You might have the final say to register your child, but it doesn't force the other parent to participate unless you have that paragraph. So I will also include that paragraph.
Yeah, I'm not sure she has the authority to stop him from during his parenting enrolling.
Yeah.
So at this point, then when you look at it this way, the question is moot.
Well, the question is, she doesn't want the child in soccer and she has final say. He will come back and say, well, it's going to be on my time. I don't need you to take her to soccer.
Right.
But that's not what final say means.
Right. Okay.
An extracurricular major decision, and if it includes extracurricular, which it does in Georgia, means that I get to decide what activities they will be involved in outside of their school day.
Right.
And if you sign them up for soccer without my permission, that's a violation
of the
court order.
Okay.
Now, I've seen some court orders or some parenting plans that say each party is allowed to sign up their children for any activity as long as it's only on their time. That's, to me, that's a terrible solution. Dance on one, especially if they're week on, week off. 1 week I go to dance and piano. The next week I go to soccer and baseball. Well, you know, the kid's going to be overextended, number one, but confused because, you know, I'm not really taking piano every week like I should. There's no consistency. My teammates over here on the soccer and baseball team are mad at me because I can't show up for practice like they do. And it's a no-win for the kid.
Exactly.
I've also seen some parenting plans that say, mom gets final say one semester and then dad gets final say the next semester so that, they take turns. Mm-hmm. But in my experience, activities don't fall like that.
No, they don't. Football, basketball, wrestling.
Well,
no, they do not.
It depends. Yes. You know, are you going to take piano for a semester and then just stop? And then you have to wait for another two semesters before you pick it back up again.
Yes.
It just doesn't make any sense. So those kinds of things I don't think are in the best interests of children. That just serves the parents' needs.
True. Well, I'm trying to stop the parents from fighting. The ultimate goal of any of these paragraphs is to stop fighting over these things. So ideally, if you two could figure out a way just to stop fighting, that would be best for the child.
But our advice for Amanda can't include him stopping the fight. So all she all she can do is clarify with her attorney, does this include extracurricular? Or just assume it does and tell him, I have final say and on extracurricular, and then let him do the work.
Yes.
To figure out whether you do or not and come against you. And, I would hate I would hate for this to have to go to court for a judge to just make that decision, because that seems like a lot of time and money and effort for this one decision for a 4-year-old.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And she may very well go to court and present her case, and the judge sees that, wait a minute, he's just being lazy. And this child is going to need, she's only 4, for the next 8 years or next however many, 14 years. This is going to be a problem. We better get a more specific paragraph in the parenting plan. Okay.
Yep.
Another option is to go to mediation to clarify and come up with your own language that works for the two of you. I mean, obviously that's always the best option if he's the kind of person who could mediate, but you and I know, Rick, some people are not a good fit for mediation because they think they rule the world.
Mm-hmm.
So why would I mediate anything? Because I know everything. So I don't know this person. I don't like him already because he's so inconvenienced by parenting.
Wah.
Exactly. Go cry to the judge. Okay. Well, thank you, Amanda, for your question. I hope that was helpful. And take heed, parents listening. It's not your time. It's your turn.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Talk to y'all next week.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. The information contained in this podcast is generic. It must not be misconstrued as constituting legal or psychological advice. Decisions relevant to any specific individual, family system, or case require the direct evaluation of skilled, child-centered professionals.